Before I go on, let's see if there's any questions so far. Yeah. How are you doing with all this? Yeah?
How would you explain?
The question is, what about things that happen as groups that affect a whole group of people? How does that relate to karma? Well, there's karma, what we call collective karma and individual karma. Okay? So collective karma is is an action, let's say, that we do together with a whole group of people. And because we've done it together with a whole group of people, we experience the result as a group of people. Okay? Yet even within that, okay? I mean, for example, we're all sitting here as a group, right? Okay? This is the result of some kind of karmic action that we did together in the past that was obviously something, you know, positive, constructive, virtuous, whatever you want to call it, because we obviously, you know, we're in a really good circumstance where we have the ability to listen to teachings again. So we have some kind of something that we did all together in the past. Yeah. Yet within that, each one of us sitting here is experiencing something slightly different. Yeah? That's our individual karma. And even though we're sitting here now, okay, so what we're doing now, it's a result of something we did similar in the past, yet it's also a result of individual things we did in the past, because we're each experiencing something slightly different. Somebody might have a stomach ache, somebody might, you know, be really blissed out hearing the teaching, somebody else might be really restless, you know, that's individual things. So similarly, what we're doing here now, looking at it as being a cause for something instead of as being the result of something, okay, we're gathered here for a constructive purpose. This is going to create a collective karma to experience a similar thing again in the future, okay? And yet, within being here, we're also creating individual karma too, because people are thinking different things, reacting in different ways, and that's going to bring individual results that only, you know, we each experience as an individual. Yeah? So when you look in a societal way, things that we experience together as a group, it's because we've created the cause together as a group. Yeah? And this is why they say it's really important, you know, to be careful what groups we put ourselves in, okay? And if we're in a certain group without any choice, to decide whether we agree with the purpose of that group or don't agree with it, okay? Yeah? So, for example, let's say you're drafted in, you know, you're drafted into the army, or somebody comes to your house and makes you go into the army, or, you know, you don't have any choice, okay? You don't have any choice about whether you're going to go into the army, but you do have a choice about if you agree with the purpose of it or not. Yeah. And so if you go in and you say, yeah, yeah, rah, rah, I want to kill so many of the, you know, we can't kill the commies anymore. They're all disappeared, you know. But I'm sure the government will find somebody else to kill. If you go in with that kind of attitude, it creates that kind of imprint on the mind. If we're in the army, but we're saying, I don't want to be here, I don't want to kill anybody, then you don't, you know, get that collective karma from being in that group of people that's designed for a specific purpose. Okay? So similarly, you know, you brought up racism and so on, okay? Or genocide. Oh, and this one, I've talked at Jewish groups. I mean, you want to see people go bananas? Mm-hmm. Try and talk about karma to a bunch of Holocaust survivors. Whoa! You know, I mean, they completely go bananas a lot because they hear it through Judeo-Christian ears, you know. And karma has nothing to do with deserving to be deserving suffering. You know, there's no idea of deserving anything in Buddhism, okay? But let's say, you know, you're in a concentration camp, be it, you know, Auschwitz, or be it the ones that we made in Arizona during World War II, there because of a collective karma, okay? You know, experiencing the result together as a group because of having created the cause together as a group. Yeah? Now, it could be that the people who are the victims in this life were the perpetrators of the harm in the previous life. Yeah. And when you think about this, let's say in the context of the Middle East, yeah, when you think that, you know, the Palestinians could have been Jewish before, you know, and the Jews could have been Germans before, or you think that the blacks in America could have been white slave owners before, yeah, or that the whites could have been blacks before, you know, then this notion we have of fixed, rigid things completely, you know, it, yeah, makes it really silly to cling on to our identity, yeah, even as groups. As groups change a lot.
That's the question I had. You know, during the Gulf War, I wondered, like, is there a karmic, there's got to be a karmic difference between the person who believes they're part of the, and who believes in the nation state, and the person who sits there watching it all and says, wow, look at everybody believing in the nation statement. Look what happens to them, you know? I mean, in the way that, you know, in the way that you think about the group, or you feel about the group, whether groups are real or not, seems like that would affect the karma.
Yeah.
So everybody else might believe you're a member of the group. You might not. You might see it a completely different way.
Right. So what you're saying is that your individual way of thinking in relationship to the group is going to determine karma, you know, what karma you create. And that's very, very true. Because if you agree with the purpose of the group, you get the karma of the actions that group does. Yeah, that the actions that it does according to that purpose. Okay? So if, you know, the Americans go to war, and you say, rah, rah, America, I'm all for the Americans. Yeah. And you rejoice at all the people that the Americans kill. You, because of rejoicing at killing, you get the karma. You know, a karma that's related to killing because of rejoicing at the purpose, that this group is working on. Yeah. Whereas if you might still be an American, but if in your mind you're very clear, I do not agree with taking other people's lives, I am not for this at all, then you don't get the karma of those people killing, even though, you know, you might have an American passport. In fact, you'll probably get a lot of good karma because of really taking a very nonviolent stand and being very opposed to killing. So it's really important here. There's a few things going on, you know, that when we're in groups to really be aware of whether we agree with the purpose of the group or not, and also to be aware of what we rejoice at, because we also accumulate karma from the things we rejoice at. So if you read the newspaper, yeah, and you say, wow, so-and-so, you know, just got, you know, his reputation just got completely smashed to smithereens, I'm so glad this jerk got it. You know, even though you didn't do it, you create the karma of, you know, destroying somebody else's livelihood. Yeah? So if we rejoice at other people's negative actions, we create the karma that's similar to doing that. Okay? So we have to be really careful what we rejoice at. In a more positive vein, okay, when we gather together in a Dharma group, okay, the group is formed for the purpose of attaining enlightenment for the benefit of sentient beings. So when we're here doing something together, again, because of collective karma, we are sharing in each other's positive potential. Okay, in the same way as the soldiers all share in each other's negative karma, we share in each other's positive karma because we agree with the purpose of the group, you know, and why it was formed. And also, if we look at other people doing constructive actions, even though we haven't done them or can't do them, if we rejoice and have a sense of happiness and gladness, then we create a lot of positive potential simply by rejoicing in that. No, I give every answer I give, five more hands. Come on. Yeah.
I think I understand what you're saying, and I go along fine with it. And then kind of like when you're done, I fall into, oh, it's fate. You know, going fine, no, I'm determined. That's right, and it's not predetermined. And then I go, and it's like fate. And so, you know, but I understand what you're saying, that it's not. And so, in my listening and thinking, throwing me back to that, is one of the distinctions you're saying is that like fate is like directed, other directed, outside directed, and that karma is like what one has created themselves?
Yeah, okay, now you're asking about the what is fate and what are we talking about here and what's the difference.
Right.
Fate, it's a hard thing, you know, because I imagine it's one of those things that everybody you ask, they're going to have a different definition. So some people might see fate as something coming from outside. You know, it is fated, it is in the Akashic records, or it's in God's will, or it's in something, you know, pre-planned.
Okay,
yeah?
Yeah?
Whereas here we're not talking about something that's outside, we're talking about our own actions bringing the results. Also, fate has the implication of something fixed and rigid where there's no leniency, there's no way to get around it. Whereas with karma and its results, there are ways to affect it. Like I was saying, you can purify negative karma, or also the ripening of positive karma can be interfered with by anger and wrong views. So it doesn't have this hardness to it. Okay, so maybe two ways in which they're concerned.
Yeah.
I'm confused about how
fixed negative actions are. Okay. So how fixed are our negative actions? You see, when we get a lot down to a lot of the fine points here, okay. Only the Buddha is going to be able to kind of answer all these things, so my excuse is ignorance. But what I can tell you is that some things may be influenced by the culture and some things may not be. For you know, you gave the example of animal sacrifice. From a Buddhist viewpoint, that would be something where the motivation was ignorance. Okay, and not understanding that taking life is harmful and causes pain to others. Okay, so even though the people may have thought that what they're doing is good, because of the ignorance involved in it, they still are creating negative action. Even though, it, you know, in a similar way that you might think that, you know, this is maple syrup, but if it's poison and you drink it, you're still going to die even if you think it's maple syrup. Okay? So with some particular things, it's like with killing, it's what they call a naturally harmful action. Okay? In other words, there's something about taking the life of others that makes it very difficult for anything good to come out of it. Yeah? Whereas there are other things that are called declared prohibitions, things that are not naturally negative by their nature, but they're negative because the Buddha said to avoid them. Okay? So, for example, on the days when you take the 8 precepts, then singing, dancing, and playing music become declared prohibitions. Okay, they're not naturally negative. Okay, there's nothing evil in singing, dancing, and playing music, but on those days when you've taken a vow not to do it, yeah, that becomes a prohibition to respect. And so some of these things are going to depend on vows, whether you've taken vows or not. So some of these things, like in terms of sexual misconduct, you know, again, I would really like to debate it out with some of my teachers, but it's so difficult to talk about this. You know, Jamyang says they spell it out, you know, and they don't even say it. So he was saying, yeah, you know, like the teachers teach, when you do sex misconduct, then you know, yeah. So it's hard to get into the nitty gritty of this, especially with some of the monks, you know. That my question about this is, you know, for that thing, like the thing about multiple spouses, to me it seems like that is something that would really be culturally defined. Yeah? It would seem to me, but this is only my personal opinion based on my ignorance, but something like that, it seems to me, is has a lot to do with the culture. You know, on the other hand, you know, maybe one of the lamas has a really good reason why that is, has nothing to do with culture. I don't know. My opinion is that that particular instance would have to do with culture, whereas other things may not. Other things in unwise sexual behavior may not have to do with culture. For example, you know, going outside one's one's committed relationship. Or if one is, if you know you have AIDS and then deliberately sleeping with somebody without letting them know, or, you know, this kind of thing that definitely causes harm to somebody, to me that seems it has nothing to do with culture. That to me seems like it would be a very naturally harmful action, you know. Whereas other things, about that, you know, other of the details, my opinion is they may have something to do with culture, but I can't state that as a fact. Yeah, because killing, I mean, you are directly harming others. Yeah, I mean, others are getting something from what you're doing. Yeah. So you're saying, you know, are we going to tend to be reborn into similar circumstances again and again, like white people being reborn white or blacks being reborn black? That particular example, I don't think so. Okay? There might be other things where, for example, if you have practiced the Dharma a lot in one lifetime, I think it really increases the probability of being reborn in a place where you can encounter the Dharma again in a future lifetime by the force of that habit. Okay, why? Because your mind was busy during your life thinking about the Dharma directing your mind in a certain way. So it's forming a habit, so you're likely to encounter that environment. Whereas being white or black, you're not putting a lot of energy into creating the cause to be that. Okay? You're not putting mental energy into that that would perpetuate being white or perpetuate being black.
Like a really different culture from ours.
Uh-huh. Okay. Would somebody be reborn in a really different culture? Again, it's so hard to say, yeah? Because I think if somebody creates a lot of karma with a particular group of people, it depends also how they've been dedicating their prayers. You know, if you dedicate your prayers, may I be reborn as an American, you know, da 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 da, you're dedicating your prayer that way, okay? It increases the likelihood of that. Yeah? But on the other hand, they say that we've been born as everything that there is in cyclic existence. Yeah, every possible kind of rebirth, every possible kind of experience, we've had it all. Okay, there's nothing new in samsara. Something out of samsara is quite new to us. Yeah, but within samsara, we've done it all, highest to lowest, many times. Okay, so I think it depends a lot on the individual. Okay? There are certain stories, you know, in that way. But I think they tell those stories because it's convenient and it makes sense. It's easier for people to link up with. But then they also tell, I mean, there's some really far out stories in the scriptures, yeah, of people going from a human rebirth to being reborn with 18 heads and as a sea monster. Yeah? So there's a lot of really disparate things, too.
The impact on the mind before.
Okay, so the relationship between the action and the imprint on the mind. Yeah, first comes the action, and then as the action ceases, it leaves an imprint on the mind.
Well, I don't act out of what has been imprinted on my mind before.
Yeah, we do. Okay, one of the results of our actions is that it forms a habitual imprint to do it again and again. Okay, that's one of the results of the actions. Actions have many different kinds of results. We'll be getting into that. Okay, so there's the action that puts the imprint on. That imprint becomes the cause for other kinds of actions, which then put other imprints on the mind. Okay, so of all, you know, there's different kinds of results that a particular action produces. It has to do with our rebirth and the environment and what happens to us and how we behave, our habitual behavior pattern. And that's actually the most serious of all the results, because by creating this pattern, this imprint to be a certain way, okay, if we do it in a positive way, it's very good. We're forming a habit. If we do it in a negative way, it becomes quite serious. Yeah. Okay. And again, the imprints aren't things we can see and touch. Yeah. And it's not like our mind stream is something physical and bam, there's, you know, your thumbprint in it. Yeah. This is all, I mean, our mind stream is formless, not made of atoms and molecules. And so definitely the imprints associated with it aren't things that can be seen. But they definitely bring results.
Isn't
that
the time of death more powerful?
Okay, so what about at the time of death? Now, during our lifetime, we're putting all sorts of imprints on our mind. Okay? Because we're acting all the time. Yeah? So we're putting, you know, even in one day, we have many constructive thoughts, we have many destructive thoughts, many positive actions, many negative actions. All that is getting imprinted on the consciousness. You know, now at the time of death, what ripens, okay? Well, first of all, if we've created a really, really, really heavy negative or positive karma, that one is going to be like the most prominent to ripen at the time, simply because it's so heavy and so enormous. And as we get into this, you know, through the outline, there's a whole description of what makes something heavy and what makes it light. Yeah. So if something's very, very heavy, you know, it's like opening your refrigerator and, you know, there's a big pineapple there. It's like that would grab your attention right away. Okay. Okay. So in the absence of some really huge positive or negative one, then it's the thing that we've done very frequently, that we're very habituated with. Yeah? So maybe it's not such a big thing, but we've done it a lot and a lot and a lot and a lot. Like eating chocolate, you know?
Yes.
It creates a really powerful something in the mind stream. Okay? Yeah? And then also what we are thinking about and feeling, you know, at the time of death is creating all the cooperative conditions for the ripening of either positive or negative actions. So this is why it's really important when we die to try and have as calm, peaceful of an environment as possible. Okay? Because if you're in a calm, peaceful environment, it helps the mind to be calm and peaceful, which then creates the conditions for constructive action, you know, to ripen, imprint to ripen. If we're in a really, you know, chaotic state of mind, then, you know, chaotic imprints ripen and influence us. Okay? So it's not like, you know, things are predetermined, the time of death, you know, this one definitely is going to ripen. Again, we have this whole thing of interplay. Yeah? And this is what we're talking about when we talk about dependent arising, is that things arise out of many, 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 many causes and conditions. It's not this boink leads to boink, you know? It's not like that, but you look at anything in your life, there's a whole array of various factors that go into creating that one unique situation. And if you changed any of those factors, you would change the situation in either a subtle way or a very gross way. Yeah? And it's really, really helpful to think about this. Yeah? I mean, if you just start thinking into the whole array of different causes and conditions for you getting here tonight. Yeah? I mean, it depends on your job, and it depends on your car, and it depends on what you ate, because maybe if you ate something different for breakfast, you would be sick and you wouldn't be able to come. You know? And it depends on all these people you met in the past that got you linked up with the group, and that depends on all these other different things. And I mean, when you start thinking about it, just the number of unique things that happened that produced the unique event of being here tonight. Yeah, so many things. Yeah, now there was definitely a principal cause in this, but then so many other things that have to come together. Yeah, kind of is mind-boggling when you think about it. Yeah. And so it's helpful sometimes to think about this, even taking something physical. You know, you take the clock and you start thinking of all the different parts of the clock and then the causes of all those different parts. Yeah? And where did this come from? Where did that come from? Where did this come from? And, you know, who invented the plastic and who invented the digital thing? And then what did they have for breakfast and where did the little red knob come from? And, you know, and if they hadn't had a fight with the person they were married to, it might have had a blue knob instead of a red knob. But, you know, I mean, so many, you start thinking all the different things that go into the making of one small physical thing, you know. So again, we really get this feeling of dependency, yeah, and how things can be altered. You know, small things you do can make substantial changes.
How a purification interferes?
Okay, how does purification interfere? It's interesting that you bring this up because I was just writing a letter to this one guy, I'm getting off the track, but it relates. The one person who had come to some teachings I gave in India, and we've kept contact over the years, and he's going back and he's going to do Vajrasattva retreat this summer. Vajrasattva is one very strong purification practice. So I was writing him a letter and telling him about my Vajrasattva retreat, you know, and how I went in, you know, I was at Tushita and the conditions were much worse than now. And, you know, when the mice were running on the room, there was concrete floor and, you know, everything was musty and the scorpions were falling from the ceiling. And I would go into the session and all I saw was this incredible rerun video of my life. And, you know, I had no difficulty at all visualizing all my possessions and rearranging them and throwing them out and cleaning them out and buying some new ones in meditation. I had no difficulty remembering all the people who had ever harmed me, you know, and generated lots of regret for all the missed opportunities I had to retaliate. Very clear concentration on all of this. And once in a while, I got distracted and actually thought about Vajrasattva. Yeah? This was going on for 3 months. And so I was writing in the letter, and during this whole process, I kept wondering, how does purification work? Yeah. It feels like my mind is going from bad to worse, not better, you know. So what is going on here? What is this purification? And then I wrote here in the letter, but then I went back to Copan for the teachings right after the retreat. And I was so surprised because I was listening to the teachings and saying, is this what Rinpoche's been teaching the last year, you know? I didn't hear this before. It didn't mean this last time I heard this. In other words, it was like everything sounded completely different to me. Something went in on a really deeper level, you know. Something clicked, something made more sense. Yeah? So in retrospect, as I was thinking, well, what is this purification that's supposedly happening? I think a lot of it has to do with the power of our regret and our wish to purify. You know, that this wish to purify, this wish to change, this wish to let go of, you know, our garbage energy has, it impedes with the previous energy. Yeah? I mean, you can see, you know, if you create a pattern and you have your energy going like this, and then you start thinking the exact opposite, it's going to put up some interference. So I think very much that's the way the purification works. Okay? By the power of our determination not to do that kind of action again, that cuts the karma to habitually act in that way. Okay? By the power of our refuge and our altruism, that cuts others' negative energy towards us, because we're interfering with the negative energy of our motivation that we threw out towards them. Okay? So I think all these different things in the purification process, they have a way of interfering with the different steps of our negative actions. Otherwise, it's magic. That might make more sense. Yes?
Will we speak a little bit about life
around physical health? Right? Yeah, you know, I mean, like, for example, when we get sick, we can say, this is the result of my own harmful actions in the past. Now, given that I'm sick, I can either get angry and depressed and belligerent about it, in which I'm creating more negative imprint, and I'm also increasing my present suffering. Yeah. Or I can say, I'm sick, and wow, this is how other people feel when they're sick, and generate compassion, which then makes us feel better now, and it has a purifying way of cutting that continuity of negative energy in our mind. Okay? There's a really good book called The Wheel of Sharp Weapons. I actually like to teach it sometime. It's a real fun book to teach.
Wheel of what?
Wheel of Sharp Weapons. Otherwise called The Boomerang Effect. Okay? And this book, it's really great because it talks about, you know, if you're experiencing da-da-da-da-da, it's because of having done d-d-d-d-d. Yeah? And it's an incredible book for meditation because in all the da-da-da-da-da's, we see all the different things we experience in our life. And when we start looking at the DDDDDs, we start seeing how we've acted and that we've created more karma to have that experience again. Yeah? And it really wakes us up to the effects our actions are going to have. Yeah. And it helps also in giving us some sense of why things happen the way they do. Yeah. So we can learn from our mistakes.